This is Fresh Air. I'm Dave Davies in for Terry Gross, who's off this week. Today we're exploring the dire financial crisis and tough choices facing Atlantic City, New Jersey, the resort town that legalized gambling in the 1970s and for years saw huge crowds and big profits for the gaming industry. That prosperity left much of the city behind, though. Dilapidated houses and vacant stores stood in the shadows of giant casinos. And when other states finally legalized casino gambling, Atlantic City was in for a shock. Its casino revenues, which stood at $6 billion a year just 10 years ago, are now less than half that. Four of the city's 12 casinos have closed, and officials are struggling to maintain city services. Our next guest is Amy Rosenberg, a veteran reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer, based at the Jersey Shore. Amy Rosenberg, welcome to Fresh Air. A lot of people have seen the HBO series Boardwalk Empire, which portrays a very corrupt Atlantic City back in the 20s. In modern times, has this been a corrupt town?
In modern times, it has been a corrupt town. There's been a series of mayors who've gone to jail. But in the most recent times, it's kind of gotten away from that. But the HBO series portrays a big political boss who basically ruled the town. And that is a theme that is current to this day. There's all these bosses that want to rule Atlantic City. And so that dynamic, it's a big dynamic, is really since the start of Atlantic City. The people that live there, the people that work there, and then this layer of boss that wants to run the town.
Bosses from Trenton, bosses from elsewhere.
Right. So the big boss these days really is Governor Christie. He's in some ways the latter day Nucky Johnson, or Nucky Thompson, as HBO said. And at the height of Boardwalk Empire, Christie actually came down to Atlantic City. Boardwalk Empire had kind of just started. So Christie, it was 2010, Christie came to the boardwalk and basically said, "We're taking over the tourism district. We're taking over the town." It was a big splash. Christie was popular, and they did. And that was their first, the state's first stab at taking over the town.
People who've seen Boardwalk Empire think of a guy who commits murder and is an organized crime figure. We're not talking about that kind of boss when we talk about Governor Christie.
No, and the real Nucky Johnson was not violent like the HBO. What the tradition is, political bosses who want to control things in Atlantic City. And there's just been a long history of politicians and real estate people and billionaires who all come to Atlantic City and think they can move the pieces around the board the way they want to.
Governor Christie is elected in 2009, takes office January of 2010, and at this point, Atlantic City's casino revenues were falling. It was clear the town was struggling. Christie comes down and has a plan. What does he want to do?
The state said, "We're going to put all our resources toward controlling the center of the boardwalk, the Marina District, all the great stuff, and you guys worry about the neighborhoods." And at the time, it seemed like a real usurping of power. As it turned out, it was only the first in a series of state interventions that have gotten really more onerous as time has gone on. But at the time, that was considered the state coming and taking over. But their results have really been mixed from that.
The plan was to spend money on a big marketing effort, in part, right, to get tourists to come back. How were they going to do it? What were they going to tell the tourists?
Well, they did a lot of things. They spent $12 million on an art park, for instance, and they filled an empty lot with kind of obscure but significant artwork, the idea being, let's draw a different kind of tourist to Atlantic City. They also spent money on concerts, on air show events. They came up with the Do AC marketing campaign, and they tried to make it a place that people wanted to go.
In other words, don't just gamble, but do Atlantic City, the right whole experience. It's not just gambling.
Right.
And how did it go?
Basically, most of the casinos have expanded a little bit. It's more of a restaurant town, more of a nightclub town. But in the end, they're looking for gamblers. And the gamblers really were going elsewhere.
So not a dramatic increase in visitors or revenue from that?
No. In fact, the other thing that Governor Christie did is he wanted the Revel to be built. And he put a lot of state tax incentives that got the Revel, which was this $2 billion new casino. And he basically jump-started.
So the governor comes and says, we're going to take over the tourism district because we can't trust you, Atlantic City, to manage it effectively. And we're going to put new money into marketing and get people coming to Atlantic City for all kinds of good reasons. And we're going to finish this huge, huge new gleaming casino, the Revel. What made the Revel different? Why was it supposed to be so important?
Well, the Revel was going to be the next generation of Atlantic City. It was going to be that resort that people came to do everything. And maybe they'd gamble, maybe they wouldn't. But it was going to be that new model of Atlantic City to create a new idea that young people would come to Atlantic City. They would go to the nightclub, they would go to the restaurant, and, you know, they would be rich. They would come from, you know, New York City, and they would stay for several days. And this was going to be this fantasy of, you know, making Atlantic City something really exciting.
Did it look different?
The Revel was, it's a hugely tall building. It's very glamorous. It was problematic from the start. They put their hotel lobby on the 11th floor. You walked in from the boardwalk through like a huge wind tunnel, and then you had to go up like two escalators to get to the casino floor. It was a strange building. It was also never truly finished. The center of it never got built. So at nighttime, you could literally see through the center of this. They put a funny little giant golf ball on top of it. They never put its name on it. So it was kind of a strange place that kind of never really worked.
But it was huge and very, very expensive. What was the price tag?
$2 billion.
All right. So we have this moment where Atlantic City is struggling. The governor says, we're going to put new money into marketing. We're going to make sure this huge, gleaming new casino opens. And it does open, right?
Oh, yeah. It opens.
And then what happens?
Well, you know, it opened and people took tours and said nice things about it, and excellent restaurants opened up. They had a great nightclub kind of around the edges. But their whole financial model was like a disaster. It was owned by an independent company. They had no book of gamblers, no database of gamblers. And they were kind of...
The kind of high-rolling gamblers.
Yeah, they were kind of snobby toward gamblers. They didn't honor the comps that people got at another casino. They didn't have a poker room. People went and kind of felt like they weren't really wanted. And they couldn't fill the building because they didn't have enough rooms. So the paradox of the Revel was that the nightclub, which was HQ, did very well. If you went to the Revel on a Saturday night, you saw young people partying. It was well known among the club. They had the best DJs. But, you know, it was kind of like the sear around an undercooked steak.
You said they didn't have enough rooms? What do you mean?
Originally, Revel was going to be two towers. It was going to be twice as big. And it ended up being one tower with the middle of it never built out. So the middle of it is literally this internal wind tunnel, which contributed to their escalating energy costs, which was another issue that bankrupted the Revel.
Okay. So we have, at a time when Atlantic City is struggling, the fundamental problem is there are many places people can go besides Atlantic City to gamble. And this doesn't reverse any of that. And the big new Revel closes, right?
It closed. It closed. It was one of four casinos that closed in 2014.
Which was a terrible, terrible year for Atlantic City.
It was expected, but the reality of it was hard to watch.
Before we talk about that and what happens next, just tell us about what became of the Revel itself, because it was such a unique project. It was, what, sold at auction?
Yeah, it went bankrupt while it was still open, and it went through tortured bankruptcy hearings, months and months where they tried to sell it, and they couldn't sell it. And what happened is they finally found one guy that would buy it, and this guy was Glenn Straub. So Glenn Straub came from Florida, had a lot of money. He's originally made his money in concrete and dirt in West Virginia, then bought the Polo Club in Florida. Glenn Straub found out about the Revel and came up and had $88 million in cash, and they couldn't get anyone else. And ultimately, he took it at bankruptcy auction.
So we're talking about a $2 billion building going for $88 million.
Yeah.
Glenn Straub is a character. Tell us about him.
Yeah. So Glenn Straub, he's still an enigma. He's a guy, now he's come up to Atlantic City. This is his new hobby, basically. So he lives in a yacht or on a yacht. in Atlantic City. The yacht he also got as a distressed property, pennies on the dollar. So he sits on his yacht, and he can see directly out to the ocean, and he sees his boardwalk property, the Revel. And so Glenn Straub, you know, he's given any number of answers as to what he'll do with the property. But basically, he's had it for almost a year, and he's done nothing.
What are some of his more colorful plans?
He was going to house Syrian refugees. He was going to turn it into a polo field and put the horses in the garage. He was going to make it a tower of geniuses, where like a big think tank. He still talks about a casino. He's just a very odd guy. If you were in bankruptcy court, he would be called to the stand, and he would just give these long stream of conscious emotional testimony, and there would just be the silence in the courtroom, and everybody thought, no, this guy's not going to be the new owner. But then there was just no one else. So Glenn Straub wakes up every day on a yacht in Atlantic City, goes to McDonald's, gets a coffee, and then just kind of rides around his property. And he keeps promising to open the Revel, but he doesn't have a casino license, you know.
And for the longest time, he couldn't turn the lights on.
Right. So there's a big feud between the Revel and its energy company, which was part of the reason it was bankrupt. The energy costs were prohibitive.
It had its own energy company to supply power to this massive casino hotel.
Right. Yeah. And basically, energy costs were like $20 million a year. And that the energy company was blamed for Revel not being able to be sold to a more casino operator with a track record. So yeah, so Glenn Straub bought the Revel. 2 days later, they turned off the energy. So for a while, it was dark. It was considered a fire hazard. They were fining him. The sewer lines weren't operational. And the city, you know, it began to seem like it was just going to become this horrible fire trap.
But he was giving flashlight tours of the building.
He's still giving flashlight tours of the building. He was talking about buying the nearby Showboat, which was another casino that closed, and essentially running, you know, extension cords. He was going to connect to their electricity, but that didn't happen.
But so he still has the building, and at least the lights are on now.
The lights are on. The sewer system works. The pipes did not freeze. So he ended up buying the energy company for $30 million, which was considered a great sign that this guy was onto something, because that was a big obstacle. So if he does end up trying to sell it, the energy plant is part of the deal now.
Amy Rosenberg is a staff writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer based in Atlantic City. We'll continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air, and if you're just joining us, we're discussing the fate of Atlantic City. With us now is Amy Rosenberg. She's a staff writer for the Philadelphia Inquirer, who is based in Atlantic City and has covered the Jersey Shore for a long time. 2014 was a terrible year for Atlantic City, but it had a new mayor, Don Guardian, elected the previous November. Tell us about him.
Yeah, Don Guardian basically came out of nowhere. No one expected him to be elected. They had an entrenched Democratic mayor, and everyone assumed he would be reelected again in a predominantly Democratic city. Don Guardian is 62, gay, white, Republican, former head of the Boy Scouts, tall guy with a bow tie, rides his bike, came out of nowhere, and put together this coalition of not the entrenched Democratic community. And won.
He's the guy who is there when the bottom falls out. What happens to the casino industry in 2014?
Right. So Don, as his prize, Don Guardian takes over when Atlantic City is truly about to have a complete meltdown. 2014, four casinos closed. First, the Atlanta Club, which was the old original Steve Wynn Golden Nugget. That was in January. And that seemed kind of concerning, but casinos have closed before. But in September, really in the span of a few weeks, the Showboat closed, which was a corporate decision by Caesars Entertainment. Then the Revel finally collapsed, which was, again, shocking that such a new casino would close with a full nightclub up until its last day. And then a couple weeks later, Trump Plaza, the old, tired, formerly center of the boardwalk, also closed.
And what's the scale of the impact? How many jobs?
It was about 8,000 jobs. You have to remember, it was only a couple years after Hurricane Sandy. So there was a lot of pain from that. The casino industry had been cutting jobs really for years. So there's a lot of economic hardship. And this just added to the misery in Atlantic City, in the surrounding towns. Foreclosures were epidemic. And they're still really not recovered from it at all. A lot of people left. A lot of people went to other jurisdictions and found jobs. But there's a lot of unemployment. I think it's one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. And definitely one of the highest foreclosure rates.
All right. So you have Atlantic City. It's faced competition from gambling elsewhere. Its revenues have collapsed. Emergency fiscal measures haven't worked. So now the governor and leaders in the legislature have a new plan, right? What do they want to do?
They want to really take over this time. So this is now round three. Again, it's the same big ego, big boss. They think that the only way to straighten out Atlantic City is to take control of its entire government. And in response, Mayor Guardian said it's fascism. He does not want to be taken over.
Right. Well, let's be specific about this. The governor and the Democratic State Senate President, Steve Sweeney, is with him on this. And what do they propose that the state be allowed to do?
Everything. Sell assets, take over departments, veto city council minutes, basically run the town.
Unilaterally abrogate union contracts?
Right. That comes in and out of the proposal. There's some legislators who don't want that to happen.
But essentially take over the city's finances and do whatever they want.
Right. Make what they've said would be draconian cuts. And presumably that would also come with the aid that the city has been waiting for. The Atlantic City's current budget has a $33 million hole, which is supposed to be filled with state aid that was promised to them by the state, which Governor Christie then vetoed. Which is why Mayor Guardian feels double-crossed.
Now, at stake here is some significant financial resources for the city of Atlantic City if the state agrees. I mean, the governor vetoed a package which had some of this stuff. What money are we talking about?
Well, the most important immediate money is this $30 million, which originally was money that went to the racetracks. It's casino money. Then in 2010... it got redirected toward marketing efforts, and they created this Atlantic City Alliance, which did a marketing campaign. So the money is basically sitting there. It's $30 million in the last 2 years. The legislation calls for that money to be redirected basically to stop the bleeding. And that money is basically sitting there because the Atlantic City Alliance is not doing any marketing. And the casinos have now said they are willing. This is what Don Guardian said, that the casinos are willing to have this money redirected. And it's been sitting there for over a year.
Amy Rosenberg is a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. This is Fresh Air. And today we're talking about Atlantic City, New Jersey, and the prospect of a state takeover as it copes with the closing of casinos and the collapse of tax revenues. My guest is Philadelphia Inquirer reporter Amy Rosenberg. Let's just take a look at the perspective of the two sides here. Governor Christie looks at this, and I mean, he knows that Atlantic City is suffering from competition from gambling that occurs elsewhere. What does he say the problem is?
Governor Christie would say the problem is free spending. They've been dependent on the casinos. Atlantic City, governments have long viewed this as a kind of open-ended checkbook. And that they have failed to rein in their budget and that they need help doing it.
Too much spending. And Don Guardian, Atlantic City's mayor, says what in response?
He said he's cutting. I mean, and there's a lot of legacy costs with pensions and things that are not directly in their control, and that they feel like they're making the steps to make those cuts. But they want to be allowed to continue to do that.
So you really have a standoff here, don't you?
Well, you have a standoff, except that Atlantic City doesn't really have any power. It's really in the legislature. And the dynamic in the legislature is they want more casinos in North Jersey. And that's really the other drama that's going on. They're looking to get a referendum for voters to change the Constitution to bring two casinos to North Jersey.
And let's just clarify the geography here for people who don't know. Atlantic City is in South Jersey.
Right.
And so North Jersey is right outside of New York City, a big source of gamblers for everybody. If you put casinos in North Jersey, that's just it's going to take that much more of Atlantic City's revenue, isn't it?
It will. I mean, there are people predict that it will devastate Atlantic City, that more casinos will close, and that, you know, it's a disaster for Atlantic City. On the other hand, the politicians say they want to get more of that revenue that's leaving the state now. And everybody thinks casinos are the answer, even though if you look at Atlantic City, you can say casinos are not the answer. You know, casinos, if you talk to people in Atlantic City, they will say, casinos are destroying us. Casinos broke their promise to us. We didn't get anything out of this. Look at us. Look at us. We're broken. But yet they want more casinos.
When you say they want more, you mean people in the legislature see North Jersey casinos as an answer to their revenue needs?
They do. You know, jobs, construction, you know, all the reasons they have casinos in Atlantic City, they want to bring it up to the North Jersey, to the New York metropolitan area.
You said earlier that there's a tradition of sort of boss politics in Atlantic City. And you've got, you know, the governor's a powerful guy. The state senate leader is a powerful guy. Are there other players who stand to gain or who have an interest in how this all comes out?
Yeah, there's a lot of kind of ego, power, politics circling the waters around Atlantic City. There is a South Jersey power broker named George Norcross, whose name comes up all the time as the person that's kind of directing a lot of what's going on, who has an interest in, for instance, Atlantic City selling its water utility. So there's been a lot of talk about they should sell their water utility, their water authority, which brings up a lot of comments about Flint and control of the water. But there's private water companies that really want this water authority. So there's all kinds of private companies, construction companies, politically connected development companies. There's real estate people from Philadelphia who are playing their own private game of Monopoly. You know, they're coming down and buying up piers. You know, for a town that people say is dying, there's a lot of interest in all kinds of property there. So there's a secondary narrative where people are buying up cheap.
You've been living in the Atlantic City area for, 20 years. Reflect on the changes that you've seen in Atlantic City. How different is it now?
Yeah, well, Atlantic City is a ridiculous place on some level, but it's a place that when I got there was a lot of action. A lot of people were moving to the area. There was a lot of people who came to the area when they were just out of high school, and casinos had just opened, and they came down there to be cocktail waitresses and bartenders and blackjack dealers. They got these jobs. The jobs had health benefits. They made their lives there. They raised their families there on these casino jobs. But, you know, in the last 5 years, it's all started to contract. And now it becomes this kind of poignant, sad tale of a town that's best days were years ago. On the other hand, it's still a place, you know, the Borgata's busy all the time. The Harrah's is busy. They're building convention centers. You can still go to the place where Susan Sarandon and Burt Lancaster had lunch in the Louis Malle movie Atlantic City, The Knife and Fork. 100-year-old Doc's Oyster House is doubling in size. It's a funny place on some level. Even the summer when all the casinos closed, if you went to the boardwalk on a Saturday night, there were lots of families on the boardwalk having their vacation. They might not have been the ritziest people in the world, but it is still a place that people come to. They go to the ocean. The beach is free. You know, it's sort of a place that survives.
Amy Rosenberg, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Amy Rosenberg is a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer based at the Jersey Shore.